The answer is Psalm 125, verse 1. The answer to what? Well, if you were listening to the previous program, my good friend, Pastor Mark Hawkinson, he was saying that he was going to tell us his favorite Bible verse right after one of the pieces. So the song ended, and guess what? He went on to another subject. He's a host just like me. Unless we write our notes down, we forget what we promised to tell you. Let me read that to you right after I announce. You are listening to Law and Gospel on AM 850 KFUO, Inspirational Christian Radio, on this Friday, July the 6th, 2007. This is Open Line Friday. It's not that I don't have anything to say. In fact, I probably have about 2 hours worth of material, but it is an opportunity for you to phone in to tell me anything that you would like to talk about. What are the phone numbers? In the St. Louis area, 505-7850. Toll free, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email is lawgospel@kfuo.org. lawgospel@kfuo.org. So, I'm all set to go on to what I want to talk about, and almost forgot to tell you what the favorite Bible verse of Pastor Mark Hawkinson is. I asked him when I came in. He says it's Psalm 125, verse 1. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abides forever. Now, if you look up the word Mount Zion, and Zion, you will see that it is referring to the mountain upon which Jerusalem stands. And the Jerusalem which shall never be moved is the heavenly Jerusalem spoken of in Revelation. This indeed, therefore, is simply a synonym for the Holy Christian Church. So if we were to update Psalm 125, those who trust in the Lord are like the Holy Christian Church, which cannot be moved, but abides forever. How many times have you looked back in history to see persecution and attacks against members of the Holy Christian Church? They were almost wiped out. But due to the diaspora, which means going out into the countryside from Jerusalem, all throughout the Asia Minor in the times of Paul and the apostles after the ascension of Jesus into heaven, many, many Christians came to the faith. Many individuals who already were believers. You see, you didn't have to be an unbeliever just because you didn't believe in Jesus Christ in those days. Think about it for a moment. There were thousands and thousands of believers in regard to the Old Testament promises of a Messiah coming. So they already had the Holy Spirit who had moved them to faith. What the message of Paul and the apostles were was that Jesus was the fulfillment of that promise. Therefore, you can't say that people in Rome, for example, and we know there were Romans who were already believers because they had come to Pentecost, if you'll recall, to worship at the temple. So there were already believers. Now, there were two kinds of religions in the Jewish state, unfortunately. The one was true believers like Mary, Zacharias, Elizabeth, Joseph, Simeon, Anna, who had true faith in the coming of the Messiah. Then there were those who belonged to Judaism, a kind of a new religion which had come about, we think, during the Babylonian captivity, which had changed the gospel into law. People were now saved by what they did rather than by what they believed. Now, the believers, when they heard about Jesus and what he had done and what he had said, they were moved by the Holy Spirit to trust in him as their Savior. So we need to make a distinction between the number of people who came to faith who were unbelievers and those who already were believers, but hearing the message of the apostles and prophets, they had their faith now focused on Jesus the Christ as the fulfillment of all the promises connected to the coming of the promised one. So, that's not really what I was going to start talking about. until I heard Pastor Mark Hawkinson, and he said, I'm going to tell you my favorite Bible verse. And so I listened and listened, almost didn't get out of the car, and got on to another subject. And fortunately, he was in the studio, and I was able to ask him that. By the way, you know I do that a bunch of times. I'll say, well, at the beginning of the next half hour, here's what I'm going to talk about, and then for one reason or another, I'm talking about something else. If that ever happens while you're listening, do me a favor and call me and remind me what I promised. 505-7850, toll-free 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email is lawgospel@kfuo.org. Now, what did I intend on planning to talk about in between any calls that might come in today on Open Line Friday? Actually, I'm getting my theology from the latest edition of Consumer Reports. It's the August 2007, and I was kind of interested in it. My wife always reads it first and gives it to me. Great Kitchens for Less. 10 Most Hyped Kitchen Products and What to Buy Instead. And 66 Top Rated Appliances. Now, they do something here that I find very interesting from a theological point of view. Theologically, the world is falling apart. And it is all due to the sinful behavior of human beings. Not so much that their specific sins make the world fall apart, but due to sin that has come into the universe, everything is to some degree corrupted. Nothing works perfectly. That's very important to understand. If you were in the Garden of Eden, you could be in the sun all day long and you never would have got a sunburn. Now that same sun causes a sunburn. I've been talking about this a little bit in regard to advertising. Any new product usually is bought because it has features that the previous product does not have. For example, it may wash your laundry even better or make them now smell so that your boyfriend wants to become your husband or something along that line. Well, Consumer Reports does something that I find very interesting. We're looking towards replacing kitchen, and we're thinking about some countertops. And the article in Consumer Reports is entitled The Hottest Rocks, because they list here 10 countertops that you can have. They have pictures of them. Now, one of them isn't a rock. It's a butcher block, which, of course, is made out of wood. But here's what I found so fascinating. And the ones they deal with are quartz, granite, laminate, stainless steel, solid surface, marble, ceramic tile, concrete, limestone, butcher block. Now, what they have with each one, and they have a little summary there, the first word they have is best. So let's, for example, look at quartz. Best for busy kitchens. The non-porous surface is both stain and heat resistant and needn't be sealed, unlike stone. It's available in colors and styles that mimic natural stone, as well as vibrant colors not found in nature. The next paragraph in each of these has the word but. So the first word is best, and they tell you what it is really good for. And the next word is but. And you know what the but refers to? Here are the negative factors. And in regard to quartz, but seams are visible and edges can chip. Isn't that interesting? Well, what is so interesting with the quartz, the granite, the ceramic tile, the marble, every one of them has a best, and then every one of them has a but. And trying to go through and see which one would have no buts, in other words, has no negative things about it, not one of them, is in that category. Now, as I'm reading this, it reminds me of what is wrong with the world today. You often hear of improved things for farmers. They used to have DDT to kill certain bugs and other pests, and then it got into the food chain and had an impact on some human beings, and so they're now trying to get more friendly things. In fact, there's a whole market of friendly, non-toxic landscaping items, but as I remember reading about them, every one of them is best for something, but it always has a but. It always has limitations. It always has a drawback. Well, we're discovering tremendous medicines these days. I don't know how they discover it. They go to the jungles of Amazon, and they take certain plants, and all of a sudden, the stuff from this leaf can help arthritis. How they ever figure that out is beyond me. But at any rate, when you are given that in a pill or injected with it, your arthritis pains are lessened and minimized, and you can move around easier. But have you ever listened to some of the side effects? Even some simple headache remedies, by the time you're done, they're talking about possible death to certain people if you have kidney problems or something like this. I've never heard one medicine, new medicine, recently advertised on television that doesn't have a caveat, that doesn't have limitations, that doesn't have warnings. And they're really serious warnings. In fact, if you listen carefully, who would ever take any of this medicine? Now, of course, the odds are really rare that they would lead to death, but in some people, maybe 1/100th of a percent of somebody would die from this medicine. 1/100th. But that means, I better be careful here, I was going to say, yeah, that's right, that'd be 1 out of 1,000. 1 of 1,000 people would die if they take this medicine. Or is it 1 out of 10,000? Well, it's one of those. Let's say 1 out of 10,000. They say that 1 out of 10,000 would die if they take this medicine. You know, if the medicine is sold to 100,000 people, that means there are going to be 10 deaths. If it's sold to 1 million people, that means 100 people are going to die. But you see, some people die from eating peanuts. That's a common food. Remember, at least the airplanes I'm on, they no longer give out peanuts. Instead, they give out pretzels with lots of salt. Now, why do they do that? Because they also want you to buy more liquid, like the kind they sell. Spirits. I fool them. I just get tomato juice or orange juice, which has lots of sugar. Oh, boy. Yeah, you can't win for losing. I've often thought about maybe constructing a grocery store and have it for specific kinds of illnesses. Like if you have cancer, this would be the cancer aisle. So when you go down that aisle, the foods there are all good for people who have cancer. Or a diabetic aisle. I don't understand why there's not as many people are that have diabetes these days. And because so many of the young kids are overweight, it's an easy thing to do, type 2 diabetes. Why there isn't a whole just shelving section in the entire supermarket just for diabetics. Number one, there'd be no sugar, very, very little salt, and you'd be able to go down there and feel comfortable in buying that kind of food. Or a diet for diabetics. They have a diet for everybody else. I guarantee you that somewhere along the line, if somebody hasn't already thought about that, that is going to happen. But I don't care what you eat. If you have cancer, if you have diabetes, if you have some other illness, the doctor will say, okay, here are the things to eat, but don't do it in excess. Because if you do it in excess, wow. Living in a fallen world, there's really nothing that tastes really good that isn't really expensive. Have you ever noticed that? Unless you have a taste palate like I have, where White Castles are as good as Ruth's crisp steak at $100 a plate. I mean, I enjoy eating White Castles. In fact, try and eat a Ruth's crisp while you're driving down the expressway. It's kind of hard to hold the wheel. Also, then use a sharp steak knife and a fork. I dip it in barbecue sauce and eat that. That's very hard. Whereas a White Castle, just hold it in one hand and it's gone. Now, some people, unfortunately, have better taste buds than I have. So I have found that the things I really like tend to be more expensive. Well, will somebody please let me know, and you can email me this at lawgospel@lawgospel.com. I really like pretzels, but I don't like salt. Anybody know where you can buy pretzels without salt? Or even better, potato chips without salt? Yeah, you'd sell $1 billion a week, I think. Because a lot of the things without sugar are good. I've been trying to stay away from sugar, and so I started drinking Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi or anything diet. It's kind of interesting, and this is the way the world works also, that your taste buds become accustomed to it until finally I realized that staying away from sugar drinks and drinking diet drinks isn't very helpful if you drink 14 balls a day. Because all these diet drinks maybe have no sugar in them, but they have salt. And salt can be just as bad for you to excess. You can't win for anything. It's interesting to note, as I was looking at these countertops, that the ones that seem to have the least number of disabilities or negatives to them are always the most expensive. And these are rocks that come out of the ground, a lot of it, like quartz or marble or granite or concrete, things like that, limestone. You think that God would have a perfect rock that was so plentiful, that'd be quite interesting. It reminds me of that little joke I heard once about a man who went to heaven. And the angel said, you can have one wish. And he said, I hope that my mansion has a room full of gold. And the angel looked at him and said, well, no problem. We'll just go take up some pavement and put it in your room. Remember, the Bible talks about heaven is like streets paved with gold. What we think is costly and really expensive in heaven will be free and plentiful if we need it. I have no idea what heaven is going to be like, if it really is street paved with gold, or this is just a way of giving us an indication how different heaven is than earth. All I do know is that once I get there, I will give nothing to return. Our phone number's here. If you'd like to talk about this, or remember, open line Friday, any question you would like, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I think it's time to get the ball rolling. I've said my piece for the day. Let's go talk to Phil, who's on a cell phone. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
How can I help you?
Were you waiting for someone to call in and say, where's the law gospel application for what you were just talking about?
Well, I can easily give it if you'd like to hear that.
Yeah, I thought you were going to make a point there, and I was waiting. And I was like,
yeah.
Wow, where is this at?
Okay. Let's think about it for a moment. The law and gospel is, people really think, for example, under the law, that performance counts. And therefore, they think that the better they do before God, the more they are going to be liked. Now, when I go out into the world, I think that if I really buy expensive stuff and material that is hard to find and really does a lot of things, that I'm going to have like a perfect kitchen. I may have a perfect quartz tabletop, and then on the first day we have it, you're going to end up picking up a pot, dropping it on the corner, and it chips. That's one of the problems with it. Then I'm going to feel that, look, I gave a lot of money for this. Why isn't it working the way it should? From a law gospel perspective, the law teaches us we are in a fallen world. For Christians, our expectations, especially in regard to possessions, therefore, need always be lower than other religions. You see, in other religions, you have the idea that the better you are towards God, the nicer he will be towards you and the more blessed you are. So here comes a Christian, goes to church every Sunday, gives offerings, tells others about Jesus. They buy this very expensive quartz top, and the first day they drop a pot on the side of it, and it cracks it, chips it. And they're wondering, now, God, what did I do to deserve this? But if they come in with their eyes open and realize we're in a fallen world, they won't confuse law and gospel as much as those who have this legalistic view of the world. Now, is that pretty good, Phil?
I like that.
I thought you would.
You know, and it reminds me of my son and I. He's 22.
Uh-huh.
And I was, you know, talking to him about some of the struggles that you have in your mind when you're a Christian, and some, you know, you fight all the time, because he was under the assumption, someone told him, that once he becomes, you know, if he gives in to God and becomes a Christian, and that he'll never have any problems before. And he said, well, you know, if you're having problems, Dad, and I, you know, then why should I even try? You see, because he had the wrong perception of what, you know, living for God was, and he had the wrong perception of what a Christian was. So I helped him through that. So that reminds me of just what you were just saying.
Exactly. And I really appreciate you for keeping me on point, Phil.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right.
I'm going to follow up with Phil, and as he listens to me. The analogy we use of this earth is really, really important. There's two extremes you can think about Christians being on earth. When you become a Christian, earth either becomes heaven or it becomes hell. Well, the fact of the matter is we got to get back on that horse and figure out the paradox. It is certainly not heaven, because, as Paul says, if for this world we are really looking forward to things, then we are of all men to be most pitied. If we think the end is in this world, then we're going to be really saddened. But it's also not hell, because in hell, the people receive no comfort from God. And God gives us a lot of comfort. Here's the analogy I would like to be thinking about. That this world should be likened to a jail. A jail? That seems kind of odd. You mean just for unbelievers? No, for Christians also. And that's what I will explain when we get back from the break. In the meantime, if some of you understand the direction I'm going, that we ought to liken this world as a jail, because then we will have a balanced view of what to expect and what not to expect. Give me a ring here, 505-7850, toll free 1-800-730-2727, and lawgospel at KFUO.org. I'm Tom Baker. Stay with us through the break.
Here's an email we received at AM 850 KFUO, sent by Jen in Las Vegas to Pastor Wilkins. She says, I've been listening to you for almost 18 months. Thank you for your show. It has been wonderful, and as we're military, we are often where we wouldn't otherwise hear the show without the internet. So we're thankful you all have the segments of your show and Pastor Baker's show and the Bible study archived online. Thanks, Jen, in Las Vegas, for writing to us. And you can write to us, too. C. Rather at KFUO.org.
Is Merry Christmas lost? Not at all. Merry Christmas is alive and well in the hearts of Christians everywhere. In the new book from Concordia Publishing House, What Happened to Merry Christmas?, you'll learn how to teach the real meaning of Jesus' birth and the celebration that surrounds it. Children ages 5 and up learn that Christmas is everywhere they are, found in the symbols and traditions of even a modern Christmas. What Happened to Merry Christmas?, new from CPH, Concordia Publishing House.
This is Dr. Bill Meyer with the James Dobson Family Minute. It's important for women to have friendships outside of their marriage. My colleague Dr. James Dobson explains.
It's a mistake to wait all day long for him to come home, having seen no other adult. And when he walks in the door tired and exhausted from the day, to expect him to be able to meet her emotional needs when he's been out there in that world and he can't wait to get off the freeway and get home. And I have strongly recommended that women get together, talk together, pray with one another, support one another.
Stay-at-home moms need to find a support system of friends that they can talk to during the day. By being involved with other moms through playgroups or preschool, you have a chance to socialize and feel like an adult again. Then when your husband gets home from work, you don't have to depend on him for total emotional support. For more on building a healthy marriage, come visit us at family.org.
Well, how about a little midday relaxation and spiritual encouragement? Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson. That's exactly what you'll get on Moments of Assurance each weekday, noon hour. I'll share my spin on the news and some views of what Jesus has to say to you every day in His Word. You'll get a little trivia, a little humor, the right amount of Christ-centered music, along with prayers and lots of joy centered in Jesus. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance weekdays at 12:05 p.m.
He rejected the paganism and the polytheism of his day. His visions and his teachings gave birth to what is today the second largest religion in the world. Muslims believe he was the last and greatest prophet of God. But who was Muhammad? We'll answer that question Friday on Issues Etc. with Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch.
Weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on AM 850 KFUO.
Are you considering what to do with the rest of your life because you just have a job instead of a career? Are you wondering just how to get ahead in today's job market? The Educational Opportunity Centers can assist you in learning more about your interests and strengths in planning your career goals and educational objectives. EOC has career assessment centers at the Forest Park and Belleville locations. Contact EOC today at 1-800-875-5932.
Ladies, if your sister was diagnosed with breast cancer and you were not, help fight this disease and join the Sister Study today. The Sister Study needs you to help learn what causes breast cancer. Women ages 35 to 74 can enroll by calling 1-877-4-SISTER. That's 1-877-474-7837. Or go to sisterstudy.org. The Sister Study is conducted by the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences.
Tom Baker, Law and Gospel, and I want to know how many people were really listening. We're going to do a little test here. I promised what I was going to talk about right when we get back from the break. And let me say, the first person to call in with the answer, what I was going to talk about, I will send them a free copy of the Good News magazine. The Good News magazine is one of the best magazines, if not the best out there, for understanding the Christian faith. It has over two dozen topics, baptism, Lord's Supper. This one I'll be sending you is on teaching the Christian faith. And so it's a very, very important one. So, okay, the numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is lawgospel@kfuo.org. And the question is, what did I promise that I would talk about during this next half hour? To kind of bring you up to date, we had a call from Phil who was asking about what was the Law and Gospel point of view in going through all these various kitchen cabinet tops and showing that none of them are perfect. They all fall short somehow. They all have limitations. Well, the point was, from a Law Gospel perspective, a Christian has a lot better understanding of reality than a non-Christian does. Well, let me say that again. A Christian has a lot better understanding of reality than a non-Christian does. Most non-Christians are Buddhist. or Hindu. Whether they know it or not, they kind of believe in karma. What's karma? Karma is justice, getting what you deserve. The reason most people in the world work hard is they think that that is going to pay off. Now, there's no doubt in some areas that kind of understanding of karma or justice is true. If you go to school and don't study at all, I doubt if you'll get A plus on many tests. If you want to play the violin and you practice 5 minutes a year, you won't be in any symphony. So there are some areas of life where practice does at least lead toward perfection. But not in Christianity. It's just the very opposite. The more you try and give God good works to win his favor, the angrier he gets. That's right. He actually gets angry. Just like a parent would get angry if a child comes up and says, "Mom, Dad, I took out the garbage. I washed the car. Would you please now give me supper?" And you look at him and say, "Wait a minute. Did you think you had to do those things to have supper?" Well, yes. You see, that would be a terrible family relationship for somebody to think that they have to work for their supper, work for the love of their parents. And I think parents would be very upset that the child wouldn't come to an understanding of what true love is. So that's a really critical point, that most people believe in karma. Now, when you believe in karma, your attitude changes toward the world. For example, if something goes wrong in somebody else's life, and for example, we hear this on radio, television all the time, some politician, he's preaching morality or he's preaching a particular point of view, he's really, really strong on it, and all of a sudden you hear that one of his children got arrested for one thing or another. It's happened to presidents of the United States, it's happened to senators, it's happened to House members. And immediately the press starts talking about and using that to contradict their point of view. Now, those of us who have had children know how absolutely difficult it is that a child will turn out properly in this day and age. There are so many other conditions and things that affect that child's outlook. Not just television, but folks at school, teachers at school, soulmates, the internet. And it's not at all hard for a child to veer away from the direction his parents want him or her to go in this day and age. So it can become really, really a problem. Now, if you want to talk about anything, you can phone me here at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And we now have an individual who has reminded me what I wanted to talk about. So there is at least one person out there listening, and that individual is correct. We wanted to liken this world to a jail. We wanted to liken this world to a jail. And now we're finding out how the individual figured it out because he has it tape recorded and he went back and listened. Oh, that's great. So he was actually listening, can't remember, but he went back and listened to the tape recorder. You know, this doesn't show me as a very good host there, Buzz. They can't remember what I promised. All right. How is this world like a jail? I'm thinking a lot about jail these days because I'm going to jail. At least I hope I'm going to jail. It's maybe a jail. It's a prison. We have a pastor who is ministering to prisoners, and we're working on a possibility of going over there and doing a seminar about law and gospel to people in jail. Now, I think the world is a jail, a prison, in this sense. On the one hand, it's not hell, because in hell, you'll get nothing that you want, and everything will be horrible. But in a jail, even if you're imprisoned, you still get three meals a day, you have a place to sleep, You definitely have clothes. You've got people to talk with. You can look at television in most prisons. You can play games. But you're imprisoned. Many of your hopes and your desires, even if you start working on them, can be crushed by just one word from a guard or something from another prisoner. You're not really at all in charge of your life in prison. But guess what? You're not in charge of your life at all in the world. How many of you made plans to go on a big vacation? Months in the planning. Get everything all packed up. You have your plane trips going there and back. You got absolutely good deals. And the day before you leave, a close relative of yours is killed in a car accident. Maybe your mother, your father, your son, your daughter. Well, guess what's happening to the vacation? Canceled or on hold. You see, you really are not in charge of your life. If you are a Hindu, they tell me that Muslims, because of this idea of Allah, what does Islam mean in English? To submit. And what they mean by submit is not what Christianity means by submitting. I'll make that distinction in a moment. What they mean by submit is that you knuckle under. You knuckle under. Whatever God, Allah, I should say, decides, because there is no person called Allah who really exists. Whatever he decides, for you to get sad over it, is really dishonor towards Allah. They tell us that at Muslim funerals of extremist Muslims, there is no crying allowed. And you can understand that. If you have that view of a God where he is in such control that it is his will whatever happens, then how can you cry about God's will being done? See, this is what I'm saying, that your view of your God changes your attitude towards the world. We have a God whose will can be broken. In fact, it is broken often. It's called sin. Now, see, for other religions, the view that the Christian's God's will can be broken means that he is a weak God, whereas we see him as just the opposite. He is an almighty God. You see, it's a weak God who can't stand his will being broken, as though it is some charge against his identity. It's a strong, almighty God who permits his will to be broken because he doesn't want to have a bunch of robots. He wants somebody who truly loves him. Also, compare, who's the strongest God? The God who insists that his will be done and gives no freedom to man outside of it, or the God who allows us such freedom, and then when we make the mistake, he comes and dies for our mistake. Obviously, the Christian God is far greater than the non-Christian God. Even though people who believe in the non-Christian gods think that they're really almighty and our God is kind of weak because he can't even handle his own people. But if they ever think about that in a family situation, it would be like, we just read a letter not long ago from one of our listeners who's a father, and it wasn't a real father. Her real father had died, and then mom married another man. So was that a foster father? Because of what he perceived to be her disobedience, he kicked her out of the house. My way or the highway. See, that's what we would call not a very nice father. And yet, most religions in the world, that's the kind of worship they have towards such a God as that, my way or the highway. So how do you get off the highway back into his home? You do whatever he wants and you submit to him. Now, in contrast, what is the word submit mean in the Christian context? Well, first of all, we see that Jesus submitted to the Father. We don't see a lack of love between the two of them at all, but a great amount of love. So what does submit mean? It actually comes from the two Latin words making up that English word. Sub means under, like submarine, underwater, and missio means to send. To submit means to be in agreement with going on the mission for which you were sent. Jesus was in total agreement because of his love for the Father to follow through and fulfill the mission of coming to earth in order to die for the sins of the enemies of God. That's you and me. That's what he did. He submitted to the Father. Submitted doesn't mean you're inferior. In fact, only people with a high level of integrity can truly submit in the proper way. Everybody else submits because they think they have a mean God and they better submit or else you're in trouble. So I'll show you how understanding the wrong kind of submission towards God can really mess you up in the world. If you have the kind of God that Allah is, or the Buddhist or the Hindu view of life with karma, people get what they deserve. When you see somebody, perhaps, who comes down with a great sickness, you really don't have the motivation to really be their friend and help them out because they're just getting what they deserve. And in fact, you may be getting in the way of God if you even stand to help them. Evidence of that is clear from the New Testament when Jesus was crucified for what? For healing lepers of their leprosy. Now, what kind of religion would crucify somebody for healing the sick? Well, the kind of religion that believes in karma or the God of justice who gives people what they deserve. And so here comes this Jesus of Nazareth, and by the power of the devil, he's taking away what people deserve, namely sickness and so forth, that God intends, and replacing it with health. He's going against God himself. See, that's the problem with religions of the law. They have a totally messed up view. Now, if you recognize that this earth is a prison, in the sense that things are not really going the way that we wish they would. I remember the first time that my sons and I, we wanted a room in the basement. And I had seen on television that they put up some 2x4s and then they put some sheets of plywood on it. And so that's what we did. We kind of nailed some 2x4s to the top of the rafters. And they sometimes didn't quite reach the basement floor, which was curved. So we stuck some wood under it so it'd stay up in the air. And then we banged on panels there, and I think the thing lasted for at least 3 weeks before it came tumbling down or broken or whatever. Obviously, we had no idea what we were doing. We were just doing what we thought would be working because that's how rooms are built. Put up some 2x4s and attach panels of wood to them. Of course, the door we put on never fit because we didn't realize that you kind of need a frame. We just kind of cut a piece of wood that we thought would fit in the opening. And we learned something about squareness. If the opening of your door isn't square, then a square door isn't going to close very well. It was then I decided to be a pastor rather than a carpenter. No, I already was a pastor. But boy, to be a good carpenter just doesn't take skill. It takes a lot of knowledge. I mean a lot of knowledge. Where was I recently? Oh, yeah, downtown St. Louis. I had to go down to there's another big radio station, KMOX, and I was in that building for some business. And standing outside those buildings and just kind of looking up, how do these things stand? I couldn't even put up a room which had a floor and a basement to be hinged to. The amount of knowledge that architects and engineers have to put together one of these skyscrapers, and they call them skyscrapers because a lot of times, some of the tall ones, you can't see because the clouds are hiding them. That's how tall they are. Now, even they come tumbling down, as we saw. Whoever thought that when the terrorists hit the Twin Towers, that they'd all come tumbling down. But the way they were built, as soon as the foundation of one was really ruptured because of the gasoline from the plane, as it fell on the next one, there were really not strong supports to hold up two floors at that point, which then became two floors falling down to the next floor, and then three floors falling down to the, and you can see just one after the other down to the bottom. And who forgets when they built the Titanic? Indestructible, except for some water that sunk it. Now, yes, the water had kind of frozen into an iceberg, but all it was frozen water against the ingenuity of men. We all have our Tower of Babel experiences where we build a monument to ourselves and then wonder why it comes crashing down. In reality, God permits that because he has a bigger goal than making sure things work out in this world. He only said it one time, and that was the end of the creation of six 24-hour days when he said all was good. The word good, it's tov in the Hebrew, it's T-O-B, transliterated into English, and it just simply means that everything was perfect in the sense that it was working the way God intended it for to work. Now, nothing does that anymore, and I do mean nothing. We have tremendous gifts, like electricity, and how many people die from being electrocuted each year. We have tremendous gifts, like gasoline that runs cars, and how many people die from gasoline explosions or gas stoves in a house that blow up. Every gift that we have in this earth, because it's fallen, always has a limitation, always has a dangerous point. There is no food. Even the candy God gives, and about the closest we can get to that is, have you ever eaten cherries off a tree that are nice and juicy? It's like eating candy. But if you eat more than what you should, you're going to feel it afterwards. You'll have an upset stomach and other consequences. Too much of a good thing is not good. That's why heaven's going to be such a riot. Well, maybe you shouldn't use riot because that sounds like everybody up in arms. No, your arms will be up in the air giving praise to God, but it'll be a riot in that you never get sick. Now, we'll probably have the sense not to overeat if we're eating in heaven. And I think we will because Jesus talks about the next time I drink of the fruit of this vine will be when I'm with you in heaven. So there are going to be some things, but can you imagine that everything you eat is just absolutely perfect? There's a restaurant we go to, and it has this, it's a custard that they burn the top with a torch. And you get this nice, really good stuff. And it's an all-you-can-eat, of course. And the first time I went there, I ate that first. And it was so good, I ate two more. And then I had my meal, and I came back to get some more because it was so good. And there were none there. And I said, are they bringing more out? And they said, no, we only put out like 40 of them a night. And when they're gone, they're gone. So here I had eaten three of them. There were about 100 people eating there. So I learned my lesson. You know, when I came the next time to eat there, I grabbed six of them and ate them first. Well, it's not my fault that they only put out 40. I don't know, you're spending. I mean, it was over $8 for a full meal. You think you could eat all you want, but what we're talking about today on this open line in between calls is just the fallen world we live in and the realistic view the Christian has, which really is quite comforting because then our expectations are not as high. When you have really, 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 really high expectations, guess what? You can really fall down quite a bit. And if you're just tuning in, no, this is not the food channel. This is AM 850 KFUO. But we're talking about how whether it's food you're eating, whether it's a kitchen you're putting together, whether it's a car you're driving. I just heard of an individual who has a car It's like 30 years old, in pristine condition, and only has about 4,000 miles on it. Guess what they had to do? They started up recently, and it wouldn't start. They have to put in a new engine. It only has 4,000 miles. Why? Because even when engines aren't running, they're kind of sitting there, things start happening to the interior of an engine. I heard that when I was a kid, that you don't want to buy a car or owned by someone who's only driving in the city at 25 to 30 miles an hour. Normally on used cars, I like buying a car that I know has been on the highway a lot, because highway miles are usually better for a car than city miles with go, stop, go, stop, go, stop. And highway miles at cruising at 60 or 65, that's very good for a car. It actually will last longer if you have more highway miles than city miles. So people don't realize that. But what car is there that's perfect out there? That there's absolutely none. Consumer Reports will indicate the repair quota for certain cars. And so you've got some cars that are sometimes foreign made that are much better repair records. But guess what? They still have repairs. Things still go wrong. There's nothing that's perfect. And when you realize there's nothing that's perfect, your expectations aren't as high, and therefore the drop into depression can never be as low, because you're kind of expecting it. Every now and then you have a really good day. Yesterday was one of my better days I've had, out of the last seven. It was just really tops. There were a number of things that clicked together. I had a number of appointments to get to. Everything worked. There was some mail to put out. We got the mail out. Things just really went well. So I'm expecting the next 2 days to be offsetting that somehow, and things kind of go wrong. So far, nothing really has happened that. In fact, this morning was a very good morning, too. And we've got some people over at the house, and they're, you know, putting together items. And, I'd like to, in fact, say hi to Carrie, Ruth, and Junior. And anybody else who, oh, what? Oh, yeah. And Louise. Yeah. Hi to all of you as we end this hour of Law and Gospel here on AM 850 KFUO. And our next hour, we'll go to open lines. And you can phone me here to get started at 505-7850. Toll free 1-800-730-2727. And we'll also start replying to some of our email that we have received. I'm Tom Baker. Appreciate letting us come into your presence. God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel with Tom Baker, Monday through Friday at 1:05 p.m. on AM 850 KFUO. You can write Pastor Tom at AM 850 KFUO, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or at this email address, lawgospel@lawgospel.com.